Hello everyone, this is James Baca, known professionally as the Notorious Banker, and welcome to my podcast. 30,000 plus amazing followers across all social media platforms at Notorious Banker. On TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter, I am the author of High Risk Transaction, the Ryan Coogler Bank of America Incident, available in ebook and paperback format on Amazon. I am also working on a couple of other books, I have mentioned them in the past, and hopefully they will be published in the near future. As long as I get off my ass and actually do it. Guys, thank you so very much for the love and support. I really do appreciate it. It has been a while since we've done this. It has been 7 weeks. You know, I mentioned in the previous podcast, which was on my 40th birthday, that I plan on taking a bit of a hiatus while I write, while I try to do other things to kind of broaden my horizons and expand my footprint, if you will, as the Notorious Banker. I launched a Substack, of course, which is thenotoriousbanker.substack.com. I will have a domain name shortly for that. I am looking at a couple of options. The one that I want costs $4,000, so I can tell you that will not be an option. But I am, you know, doing a lot of writing on there. I am semi-active on social media on Twitter. And, you know, it's just been really kind of a recharge and a reboot, if you will. I think a lot of things going on in banking right now, especially after the failure of Silicon Valley Bank and the other banks that were, you know, on the cusp of failing or did fail, was kind of a way station point in the banking conversation in this year, 2023. I really feel that, you know, things have kind of toned down to where we were a couple years ago when we were talking about overdrafts, when we were talking about PPP fraud and Zelle issues and whatnot. Now, don't get me wrong, a lot of those things are still there. The government is coming after the PPP fraudsters. Zelle is still a bigger pain in the ass than ever. And so many other things that just negatively impact clients. And of course, you know, that's one of the things that I love to talk about is how it impacts the average person. The common folk, the Joe six-pack, the Joe 40-ounce, you know, those people are the ones that I worry about. I don't worry about the rich people not getting enough interest on their savings account. You know, that's just not my forte. You know, people who are in a position to make a lot of money or have a lot of money have resources. I like to deal with people who do not have resources because I want to be their resource. And that is why I started this podcast. My job as the Notorious Banker was to bridge the have-nots into having a respectful and respectable conversation with the people that hold their money in these financial institutions. And I think we have done a really good job at it. You know, recovering nearly $4 million over the course of the last 5 years as the Notorious Banker in various ways assisting people, especially in 2020 and 2021 during the height of the pandemic. I have fought for my own rights. I have fought for my own money. And I have expanded my footprint to, you know, talk about consumer issues in other realms as well. And, you know, the Notorious Banker podcast is not going to limit me to just talking about branch banking. I think what I'm doing with my Substack and consumer issues, I really think that's going to be a fun topic to talk about and basically to make sure that this podcast is not going to be stale. When I do decide to record a podcast, I really want to get back on a weekly schedule after all this hiatus, and I'm going to try to commit to it. But of course, I recorded on my 40th birthday, and I was sick as a dog. I was sick for the better part of a month, you know, just this nagging cough, and just couldn't breathe right and everything. It just was not fun, and made me not want to do anything. And then in May, I just had this severe case of writer's block, and I still have it right now, which has kind of impacted me from completing a book that I have basically called my labor of love, because it has to do with the 22-23 New Mexico State basketball team and all the issues that they had. I really want to have a different and unique take on what's going on with them and the media surrounding them, and I really think that that project will be a successful one if and when I do complete that. So I want to do that. So I had that, you know, you feel sorry for yourself every now and then whenever you have writer's block or you just have things that you have to work through. And I'm the first person to admit whenever I have those issues. So, you know, that's why I'm talking to you now, because, you know, through the course of this podcast, which started in 2018. It's been a while since we started this podcast. You know, we have peaked to having 6,000 people on average listen to this podcast at the height of all the banking bullshit in 2019 and 2020. And we still get a good 1,500 to 2,000 people listening when I post a podcast. And of course, when I fire up the hype machine, it could be a little bit more. When I have a topic that people want to listen to, you'll get a little bit more on there as well. So I am committed to this. I am committed to making sure that it's not just going to be, you know, James hates Bank of America, the place that he worked at, so let's just shit on them for a while. And we're gonna do this podcast a little bit differently today, because we're going to talk about something that's actually come to the forefront locally for me here, but it's everywhere, especially in the last couple of years since the height of COVID started to wane and we started getting back to, quote, normal. Not that anything is normal anymore in this world, you know what I mean? But local banks, the once storied savior of customer service, of customer experience, is no longer going to be the case. And it's all because of technology. Now, you know, as a 40-year-old person who is looking at 3 cell phones on his desk as I talk to you, I can tell you, and not to mention I have a smart TV for a computer monitor, I love technology. I am a technophile. I will tell you, it's one file to be, that's a positive, you know. If someone says that you're a technophile, well, it's better being that than the other kind of file, you know what I mean? But, you know, what I'm getting at here is, I love technology, and the world loves technology, from old ladies playing slot machine games on iPads to just the basic, you know, smartphone to be able to video chat with someone. You know, we have all these cool features. Of course, we have, you know, rear view cameras on your car to avoid getting into wrecks. All this stuff is just making life better. It does make life more complicated at times, but you know, 51-49, it's mostly a positive. But where it kind of just disappears is when everything is virtual, when customer service becomes, you know, just words on a screen and not an actual person talking to you. And that's where I kind of dovetail from loving technology, because I really think that so much can be had by the customer service experience, and so much more can be solved by the customer service experience when it's face-to-face, mano-a-mano, and you're, you know, you don't want to smell the person's coffee breath across the desk from you, but at the same time, you know that you can impact that person's life by helping them if they are 2 feet away from you in an office. So about a mile and a half from where I sit right now in this glorious subdivision here in Las Cruces, New Mexico, stands a bank, First Light Credit Union, formerly known as Fort Bliss Credit Union, a generation ago. Seeing the construction crews out there the last couple of weeks, seeing them rip apart the tubes of the drive-thru window, and that brought me back to when Bank of America did that in 2013 at my location. And I'm like, oh my God, what's going on? You know, drive-thru, that place was packed all the time. All the time with customers going through the drive-thru. And I'm seeing all the mechanisms for drive-thru banking being ripped out of that side of the bank. And I see 2 big, gigantic divots in the pavement. And they are perfectly, you know, rectangular in shape. First thing I thought was, oh man, they're going all ATM, just like Bank of America, just like Wells Fargo, just like other places are trying to do. A few weeks ago, a couple ATMs fired up there, and I start to see it. I start to feel great customer service leaving local banks and credit unions as well. Not that we weren't getting there, but we're finally at our destination, folks. And I'm just going to give you some commentary about why I don't like it in the first segment. Because, you know, I had a lot of customers who left my bank for the customer service experience at a smaller bank. Well, the chickens have come home to roost, and several years later, they're having to experience the same thing. So where do those people go from here? I'll get into that in just a second. And the second part of the podcast is just more for me. As I mentioned, the Notorious Banker, I wanted to be more of a, you know, consumer advocacy, customer service issue type of discussion every once in a while. I had an incident at Panda Express last Friday, and it was actually 2 weeks ago. And it wasn't a horrible experience, but what happened with my order told me that managerial problems are not just, you know, in banking or in the places that you think they are. You know, bad managers can lead to having bad employees, and that can lead to a bad customer service experience for you. And while I was not fundamentally impacted by horrible customer service and the fact that I still had food that I got to consume and it was pretty damn good, I can tell you this little trick of the trade that a manager taught their employees at Panda Express made me feel a little less positive about the interactive experience we have with ordering on an app or ordering on a phone. And I love to do that because I really don't want to talk to people any more than I have to. But whenever someone is fudging their own systems in order to electronically give themselves a good job at what you do, and the customer gets shortchanged, I want to talk about it. So I'm going to just kind of briefly touch on this Panda Express experience that I had, because it's not important. It really doesn't matter to me, but it should matter to you, because you need to understand before you yell at a 15-year-old girl that works at Panda Express why things happen. And it's not just horrible employees. It's horrible training. It's horrible routines, you know, policies and procedures. And I'm going to get into that a little bit on the second segment, but we will talk about the big bankification. That's just something I just came up with now. The big bankification of local banks right after this, so please stick around. Hey everyone, it's James Baca, the Notorious Banker, inviting you to join me on my Substack, thenotoriousbanker.substack.com. It is called The Notorious Banker Consumer Beast. While you know me as a podcaster and bank pundit and consumer advocate on social media, writing is my first passion. I am a published author of several books. I was on Notorious, no pun intended, for my blogging on social media sites such as MySpace in the mid-2000s, which furthered my love of writing, which allowed me to develop a voice and develop confidence in this crazy world that we live in throughout the years. My one promise with Consumer Beast is I'm going to talk about more than just banking. I'm going to talk about things that impact consumers in little subtle ways that slowly but surely impact the way that you spend your money, the way that you do business with certain companies, and the way that you feel about things going on in this crazy world. Consumer Beast is going to be my pet project that I'm going to try to blog at least once a week, hopefully sometimes twice a week. But I urge you to subscribe for free at thenotoriousbanker.substack.com. There will be a paid version of that in the near future, but for now, read my content free of charge, share it with your friends, and hit subscribe on that button, please. That's The Notorious Banker's Consumer Beast Substack at thenotoriousbanker.substack.com. Thank you so much. All right, I'm back with more Notorious Banker. So I mentioned to you the big bankification of smaller banks, particularly in my area. Now, you know, 2020 came around, COVID hit, banks closed, you know, a lot of banks closed inside, you know, in person. So a lot of it was drive through, a lot of it was virtual. Some branches stayed open, but, you know, it seemed like big banks like B of A and Wells Fargo just found a way to, quote, temporarily close due to circumstances beyond our control. Meaning they were using COVID as an excuse to close banks. That way they can start to push people towards the mobile app. So they can start pushing people towards alternative ways to bank, was the way that it was, you know, stated to me several years ago whenever I was in banking. And as a person who does 100% of their banking electronically, well, I use an ATM, and that's considered electronically to the bank as well. I can tell you that, you know, I'm kind of a hypocrite because I advocate for people to want to be able to talk to a banker or a bank teller in person if they so choose. Well, I don't do any of that myself. And the main reason why is because I can't walk into Bank of America in this town because there's about three people that work there that I know very well that I really don't want to see. And there's a lot of reasons behind that. A lot of them are workplace related. And it's just something that I don't want to put myself in. I think the adult in me says, I want to try to avoid the stressors and the drama of going into the bank to doing the things that I need to do in order to bank, functionally. So I figured out alternate ways to doing that, and that's fine. I'm okay with it. But some people need to go to the bank. Some people need to get these things done. It's just the way that it is. And, 2012 is when B of A started introducing deposit ATMs in their current format at a lot of locations, mine included. And it really came to me, in the sense that, man, these things are going to replace us because you can do deposits, you can do credit card payments on them. It just felt like a lot of teller activities were able to be done at the ATM. Bank of America then rolled out something called an ATA about 2013, 2014, at a lot of locations, mostly in big cities. And we never got them at the branch that I worked at because it wasn't really needed. But an ATA was ATM with Teller Assist, which basically you got a chance to chat virtually with someone in another state to talk about banking. And you could actually go up to these ATMs, ATAs, excuse me, and cash your check or do things that an ATM wouldn't normally do. So it was a full service experience, but the teller, quote unquote, was not there. I had a friend who lived in the Albuquerque, New Mexico area who worked as a virtual teller for these ATA machines. And she said she hated it. I mean, what can I say? She didn't like it. And in fact, there was a suicide of a former employee at that location that happened that caused an evacuation of the building and whatnot. So, needless to say, not a lot of people liked it either because that happened there as well. So, that was a big thing for B of A, and then they realized pre-COVID that hey, we can't, these things work. We can cash checks, we can do things for customers with these virtual tellers, but then we don't really have, sales as a result of these customers coming in. These bankers are standing around waiting to get new accounts or additional accounts for existing customers, and the people that are virtually tellering in these machines are not referring them to the bankers. So they basically lost a lot of business that way. So guess what? Bank of America got rid of the ATAs in all locations right before COVID hit. So the virtual teller thing went away from Bank of America before smaller banks even adapted to it, because they said, "Yeah, well, it's all well and good. We get the what my former boss used to call clogger customers, customers that just want service needs that don't really provide any value and additional accounts to you out of the bank, and they got to do their own thing at a machine, and they're not messing with you." It sucks, but that's the way that these people thought about it, in banking. So then, when COVID hit, of course, all these things happened and branches closed and the ETAs were gone. And you did have some normal deposit ATMs, but they weren't getting serviced as much. So the ATM tills were getting filled with deposits. So, it couldn't accept cash anymore because the acceptor was so full of money. And then, whenever, unemployment hit, particularly in states that had big banks as the processors for unemployment payments, California, Nevada, Texas being three of them that are well known. What would happen is these ATMs would be drained of their cash within 12 hours of the day that someone's unemployment hit. So the ATMs became non-existent. So people weren't banking. People couldn't bank. So people couldn't take cash out, so they would just make purchases with their card, which makes the banks more money because they are no longer providing bank services and they're making you use a card. That way you can pay your bills instead of dealing with cash. And not servicing the ATMs meant they were saving millions upon millions of dollars by not filling those things up with cash because they were, quote, out of service. They weren't really out of service, they just didn't want to fill them up. So, we come out of COVID, and yes, Bank of America is still opening up banking centers. They're not opening up as many advanced centers anymore, which were those employee-less branches that have video chats for like home loans and Merrill Lynch and whatnot. And, you know, they have ATMs, but they don't have any employees there. They're not opening those up as much, and they're just opening up new locations in markets that they were never at. Like New Orleans is on the target list for Bank of America to be in for the first time ever. Milwaukee, I guess I should say, is going to have Bank of America branches for the first time ever as well. Wisconsin never had B of A branches. So they're moving into these markets, and they're going to have in-person service because they want to poach new customers. And they're going to do things the quote traditional way for a little bit, then go virtual, and then have non-existent service after that. That's just the story of big banks. So I mentioned at the opening of this podcast that I was driving by the local credit union about a mile and a half from my house, and I noticed that the ATM, not the ATM, excuse me, the drive-up window tubes, the drive-through tray, and the whole drive-through lanes were just totally ripped up one day. And it was not a, well, maybe they're repaving or maybe they're, you know, reformatting to add more lanes, whatever. No. I was at my bank branch in 2013 when my bank decided to pull the plug on drive-through banking. And the reason being was, and I asked this question, and they used to hate that I asked questions. Why are we getting rid of the drive-through? It's always the busiest. We help the most customers drive-through, and it's like, James, you can't open up an account in the drive-through. You can't get a credit card in the drive-through. You're not going to get someone to get a home loan in the drive-through. We're going to invite them back into the financial center, and we're going to talk to them about their needs. And if they have any questions, they're going to see who we are, and we're going to be here to do that for them. So basically, it was cutting off one method of banking your way to make you bank a certain way. That way, these salespeople can pounce on you. And these salespeople to pounce on you to be able to add all these products. You know, the number eight is always thrown around with Wells Fargo. Eight products makes a customer whole. While Bank of America didn't necessarily have that number in mind, but they always wanted you to give someone a new product every time they walked into the branch. So seeing this local credit union over here rip up their drive-thru, I already knew what they were doing. And then a couple of weeks later, I start to see some rectangular shaped divots in the ground. And I'm like, oh my God, they're putting more ATMs. And then a couple of weeks later, I see these old model full serve ATMs that I started seeing going up at B of A and Wells Fargo branches all across this great country of ours in like 2018, 2019. And I noticed that these ATMs do have virtual capabilities to be able to talk to a teller if you need assistance. And then once I saw that those things were open, I saw a lady in a nice business outfit and a dude in a James Baca Notorious Banker special, a blue shirt and black slacks with a tie, standing by the ATMs. And I had a PTSD flashback of whenever I was called an ATM ambassador at Bank of America, trying to show people the benefits of this machine that's going to inevitably replace me. And I saw them standing there and walking people through the new ATM experience, and I got so bummed out because I'm like, this credit union, First Light Credit Union, which is not a big credit union at all, is now going virtual. And I know once someone hits the I want to speak to an associate button in these machines, that the person they're talking to more than likely is not going to be an employee of that bank. They're going to be from a customer service company that handles, you know, incoming calls. There's call centers all across this area that do things like that. That person's not going to be an employee of that bank, and that person may not even be in the same state as you're in. So what happens is the customer service experience, why you picked a local bank to talk to someone that you know that is from that town to help you with an inherently Las Cruces problem or an inherently El Paso problem or whatever town that you're in. That customer service now is going to be filled by a button on an ATM and a virtual chat from someone in another state. And the reason why people choose to bank at small banks, aside from big banks, I was always told to a man, to a person, was I like the local one-to-one customer service that local banks provide. And I think about those people whenever I saw that happen, when I saw those ATM ambassadors stand there. I'm like, there's people there that left a big bank because they hated where it was going. And guess what? The local banks got there several years later. And what are we going to do about it? Well, we don't know. Now, I don't know what they're doing on the inside of that branch. One could only assume that they've limited their tellers to just a couple of tellers all day. Local credit unions or, you know, local smaller banks will typically have three or four tellers because their job is volume. Their job is to help as many people as possible. Bank of America was always less BS customers for deposits and check cashing and more sit-down customers so we can probe deep to find their financial needs. So if this local credit union is getting rid of tellers and they're having an increased push for sales, then guess what? That local credit union, in my opinion, is not as bad as a big bank. It's actually worse because they have done the one thing that they promised that they would never do, which is basically sell out their customer base and not make it a local experience, an experience that you feel is part of your community. And, you know, a lot of these local banks and credit unions sponsor all these events all across town. And honestly, that's just going to become phony because you're being helped by some person in Nebraska probably whenever you hit the help button. And your interaction with your local bank is no longer within the boundaries of your state or your city even. And that's frustrating. That's frustrating. And that's what makes it worse. Now, there was a sports story last week about a merger between the PGA, the golf tour, the professional golf tour, and the Saudi-run Live Golf, which is run by the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia, which is worth about $500 billion, and they just throw money around like nothing. And they were giving these, you know, some washed up players and some really good players hundreds of millions of dollars to play on their tour, which was a limited schedule, which was guaranteed purses, which was all the luxury that they can imagine playing for them. And those people basically forced a merger with the long-standing 100-year-old professional golf tour, which ended up just stunning everyone, particularly with the commissioner of the professional golf tour stating last year in an interview that dealing with the Saudi investment fund, the people who run the competing tour, would be akin to doing business with 9/11 terrorists. Well, that person took the check from the 9/11 terrorists last week. And these two golf entities are now going to be one in the not too distant future. So that's hypocrisy right there. Now, don't get me wrong. I watch both golf leagues because I love golf. I don't think about the political ramifications of it when I'm watching something that I like to watch. That's just not the way that I think. However, I know banking and I know finance. And to see a company that was stealing, you know, my customers with the notion that, hey, you're going to be with a local bank, local experience. You're going to get to interact with the people who make decisions all the time. So if you need to buy a house, buy a car, get a loan, get a credit card, we're going to be here with you because we're part of this community too, doggone it. Well, you know, not so much anymore. And, you know, credit unions and small banks have always been that way too. If you look at the back of your credit union or local bank debit card, and I'm just going to use for the sake of this argument my hometown of Las Cruces, New Mexico. I've seen so many of these debit cards over the years because I, you know, help people take money from them when they would open up bank accounts with me. You see, the customer service number was just this generic 1-800 number, which led to, and I've Googled these numbers before, card member services. It's just an entity that was out of a call center somewhere, and they were handling calls from all banks, like all banks and credit unions, not just one particular one. And all these banks within this network were being held by these people, and the people in the call centers had to be five times as knowledgeable as people who worked in that bank because they had to know all the different rules and nuances for all the different banks and fees and whatnot. So smaller banks and credit unions have always been cosplaying as local for as long as I know it. And that's why I never had that conversation with people online, especially after I became the Notorious Banker. Whenever, you know, someone would have a bad experience at B of A or Wells Fargo, and then there'd be all these comments, especially if it was someone famous saying, you know, I chose a local credit union and I never looked back. Whenever people say I chose a local credit union, it's funny to me that they never say I chose, you know, Los Angeles County Federal Credit Union or First Light Federal Credit Union, the one that I'm referring to over here. They just say a local credit union, like they genericize it. Like, you know, the tissue paper that is on my coffee table in the living room can be referred to as a Kleenex, although I don't want to buy a Kleenex brand bathroom tissue or facial tissue because I am a cheap bastard. Do you know what I mean? So when you say I bank at a local credit union, you're making the assumption that they're all created equal and all of them are good and all of them have pure intentions. It's not that way. Everyone is here to make money. I just mentioned the golf thing a second ago. Everyone's here to make a profit. And one of the things that just drives me wild, and it's a conversation that happens on social media a lot, is, well, you know, the great thing about a credit union is it's not for profit, meaning that, you know, the community benefits from that, whatever. You do not know what the fuck you're talking about. Okay, so if it's not for profit, that doesn't mean no one's making any money. People are making a salary. People get hired and fired at these places, okay? People do not know what nonprofit means, is what I'm saying. These people get a paycheck to sell you stuff. And they do oversell you because they do have sales goals. And if someone says, no, they don't, I will tell you, yes, they do. And if that person's not selling enough product, they will fire that person and hire someone else to be that pushy. Because, yes, the money may be with its, quote, members, and you might get that dividend check from a, you know, credit union or whatever as a, quote, member of that. And some of those banks do it. Like, I think they gave out, like, $50 at one of the local credit unions in El Paso, and I saw a news story for it, and I was just like, honestly, dude, who the hell cares? They still need to make money, because if they're not pushing sales, if they're not pushing mortgages, if they're not pushing personal loans, then there's not going to be dividends to give to the members. And then the members are going to be like, well, where the fuck are my dividends at? And people are going to be pissed, and there's going to be hell to pay. So just because the entity is a non-profit, a 501c3 or a 503c4 or whatever number, and then a parenthesis with a letter and another number after that, you know, it doesn't matter what it is. People still pocket money, and they want to pocket as much money as possible. That's just the way that it is. So whenever people use that as an excuse to love a credit union, I'm just going to say, you know, you're full of it, because you don't even know what that means. You know, the NFL is a nonprofit organization. You can look it up. The National Football League, the one that is making $11 billion a year in TV money, where quarterbacks make $50 million a year, a good defensive tackle makes about $25 million, a good offensive tackle makes about the same. Freaking punters make $5 million a year. They're a not-for-profit. They get out of, you know, certain taxes and whatnot. And when you make that much money, you hire attorneys and accountants and you make sure you don't pay taxes. That's the American way. It's finding a way to not have to do these things that we all say that we're going to do on behalf of our community. So when I see ATMs go up and people pushing their customers in a local bank to these ATMs that are virtual and that are doing all these things that we were doing 10 years ago, I'm not holding out hope for the future of banking anymore. Because I know if I walk into that credit union, there's going to be almost no tellers. There's going to be a lot of people waiting to speak to bankers, and they're going to have the objective to say, hey, well, James, you have a checking and a savings account with us. Do you have any credit cards with any other banks? Because the reason why I ask is, you know, we have this credit card here. It does have a 0% introductory rate for 12 months, and it really can't be beat. And we can actually get you signed up today. Is your address still 1204? And it's going to go to that. It's going to be exactly what I wanted to leave for so long. And that's just constant overselling. And people don't get that. People don't understand that that's a bad thing. Now, yes, we're coming on this virtual world where, you know, I buy a lot of shit on Amazon on my phone or on my computer. You know, people order their groceries, they order their food on an app or online, whatever. And, you know, we're used to all these things. I can't imagine life without self-checkout at the grocery store, because as an extreme couponer, I get to be in this terminal and figure out coupons, figure out ideas, and find ways to basically screw grocery stores out of product and allow me to save as much money as possible by experimenting with all these things that I do coupon-wise and figuring stuff out on the fly. So I love technology in that sense, and I know that self-checkout is eliminating the need for cashiers, so there's some cashiers that are going to get less or no hours going forward, but, you know, that's life. But the grocery store also never committed to saying, hey, you know what, we're local, so that means we're going to hire local people to scan your groceries, and a local person's going to put them in bags for you to take to your local house to locally eat this food. No, they're a big heartless corporation, okay? And they're just merging with another big heartless corporation in the near future. And it's going to become this humongous grocery chain that, you know, is going to get rid of thousands of people, close hundreds of stores, and live happily ever after, while a lot of people are going to be that much more hungrier because there's not going to be a grocery store in their area. Local banks are different in the sense that they had this commitment to being a part of the community and helping people locally, and now they're not going to be doing that as much anymore because of these ATMs. I noticed there's going to be another ATM installed in this little area over here, and I get kind of frustrated because I know that that means that these ATMs are a success, and it also means that the turnaround time to do a transaction is probably 2 or 3 times longer than an in-person transaction with a teller, because I mean, you've seen old people try to figure out how to find shit on a cell phone or whatever. They can't do it. They're just old and they don't understand. So if it's successful and more people are using it and they're putting a third ATM there, then that tells me that teller transactions are probably not going to be there very much longer. And I'm just waiting for the social media posts on all the community pages that I follow saying, man, that bank really went off a cliff. They don't have anyone taking deposits anymore. It took me 30 minutes to speak to someone in the office, and all they wanted to do was try to sell me stuff. I hate this place. Where's a good place to bank at? Then that person that's going to comment, because there's always one asshole that comments on everything because he thinks that his opinion matters. I guess he thinks that his shit doesn't stink, and he thinks that he is the all-knowing 411 of a particular town. And I'm talking about this guy named Braden Tidwell in Las Cruces, New Mexico. You can Google him. He's going to put his 2 cents in. He's like, oh, you really should try something local. And then that person's going to be like, bitch, I am at a local bank. And it doesn't feel like a local bank anymore. It feels like the Wells Fargo or the B of A that I left, because they wanted me to speak to someone on a screen, and there wasn't a teller to take my little deposit, and I needed to get a replacement debit card, and it was an hour-long wait. It felt like a big bank. And then that's where all that goodwill that small banks have had over the years goes away. All that goodwill just disappears because they sold their customers on a notion that, hey, we're not them. We're not that big bank. We're this local bank who's going to help you through all your problems. And then when you sit in there and you see that priorities change, and priorities only change because of what? Because of money and because of revenue. And those priorities have changed, and everyone is focused on the goal. Everyone's focused on upsells, cross sells. And you're going to not notice that part of it, but you're going to notice how things are slower because those people are working hard to please their bosses and saying, hey, I got a home loan from this person. I got this person pre-approved for an auto loan and so forth. And you're not going to realize that everything that you hated is now in local form. What can we do as customers to combat it? Well, we really can't do anything because, you know what, we got trained to rely on our smartphones, rely on internet access during COVID especially. And yes, we've had the internet in our lives for 27 years or so now. So we got to get over the fact that, oh, this is not some newfangled technology. This shit's going to be in our lives until the end of time in some form. So after a generation plus of being around it and being more comfortable around it, banks are more comfortable in saying, you know what, we think we could take the training wheels off. We're going to let these people do their banking on their own time. I always like how they empower you. It's not a, no, we're going to make you do this online because we don't have tellers anymore. They'll be like, you know, we want to empower you. We don't want you to have to rely on us. We know that you have the capability to make this deposit on your phone. We know that you have the capability to update the address simply by using our mobile app. It's always pushing people to think that, you know, it's a good thing. It's a good thing what you're doing here. It's like whenever someone is trying to make you feel good after you get dumped by someone. It's like, well, you know, she wasn't really good for you. You know, remember that one time she did that one thing to you and you felt like crap? Well, you know, that pretty much tells you the whole story, my friend. So, you know what? There's some other hot chicks out there. Maybe you can go find them and maybe you can go get with one of them. I mean, that's basically what banks are doing. They're saying, forget us. You don't need us. You have the power in that little iPhone that you got right there. And they're basically telling you in so many words that, hey, guess what? We've become everything that you despised at a big bank. So shout out to First Light Credit Union. I don't normally talk about smaller banks in this podcast, although I intend on changing that. Seeing those ATMs go up and seeing the drive-thru being ripped to shreds. Knowing that people on you know, every other Friday or the 1st or the 3rd or the 5th or the 15th of the month just pack that drive-thru lanes and it's 10 deep to cash their check because they got bills to pay. They got things to do. And now you're going to push them into an ATM, which is, they're not in a straight lane. You have to park kind of diagonally to actually park to access these ATMs. And that means that you're going to be there a while if there's these little lanes to keep you from, or keep people from getting blocked behind you. It's pretty sad and it's pretty frustrating, to be honest with you. So seeing that in that manner just tells me that it's a losing battle to say, hey, you know what, let's go local because they do this and that. No, they're going to be doing the same thing in the not too distant future. But we'll continue to monitor that and I'll continue to give you my opinion as I see fit. Because I really think that this is an important topic for a lot of customers because, yes, while Bank of America has 68 million customers, Wells Fargo 32 million, Chase somewhere in the neighborhood of 40 million, a lot of those people, tens of millions of people, choose to bank at local banks and credit unions as well. And now they are going to basically be blocked from having a good alternative to the same old song and dance. Because the same old song and dance is being played at a local bank near you now, my friends. After this brief promotional consideration, I'm going to talk about an experience I had at Panda Express. That isn't so much about, oh, my food was cold or my food was gross. But it was more about routines, procedures, ways of gaming the system to make yourself look good as an employee or a manager, but negatively impacting the customer. I hope to be done with that within 20 minutes of talking about it. So if you please stick around, I hope to entertain you with that. So I'll see you in a sec. James Baca, known professionally as Notorious Banker, invites you to join me on TikTok. It's at Notorious Banker on TikTok. Join the over 22,000 followers in following me, this weird nearly 40-year-old man, in discussing problems going on with big banks, problems going on with customer service in this crazy world, in a funny, acerbic way that no one else can match. I've had the fortune of having nearly 600,000 likes of my content since I started on TikTok last year, and it just keeps on growing. My followers keep on growing. Nick Jonas of the Jonas Brothers follows me on TikTok, which I just find weird because although I like the Jonas Brothers music, I have never interacted with the man once in my life, yet I am one of 40 accounts that he follows. That just goes to show you the uniqueness of my content, and I'm proud to say that my content is unique. We hit hit up big banks. We hit up businesses that have poor customer service. No, we don't show Karen videos, okay, because that's going too far. But we talk about things in an enlightened manner, a funny manner, and we have a good time doing that. So once again, at Notorious Banker on TikTok, join me on the social media network that everyone seems to be talking about. I promise you one thing, you'll always have an interesting video to watch when you follow me, the Notorious Banker, on TikTok. Thank you. All right, I'm back with more Notorious Banker podcast. If you hear some vibrating in the background, no, it's not me doing anything perverted. I have this little USB fan that I've connected to my desktop computer here, and it says, "Let's go Cavaliers." This was a USB fan that apparently was given away or sold during the 2015-2016 NBA season when LeBron and the Cleveland Cavaliers won the NBA title. And, you know, it's supposed to show your love for the Cavaliers to yourself, I guess. Because I don't know who else is going to see Let's Go Cavaliers if you're on your laptop, for instance, or in your personal office. So I don't understand the need for the Let's Go Cavaliers that shows up in LED lights on the fan, but it makes it nice and cool as I talk to you on this podcast because it is flipping hot. We are in summer podcast season where it's 100 degrees outside here in southern New Mexico. I'm roasting my ass off, and in this office, it's that much hotter, and you know the flop sweat's already showing up, so I need to cool myself down so I can trudge through and finish this podcast. But I got to tell you, it's a pretty nifty fan for $2. I think it was $2. It makes it really cool in here. So if you hear a little buzzing, don't think anything bad of me. I am just trying to get cool, okay? So we're going to pivot to something different on the Notorious Banker podcast now. As I mentioned, of course, I launched a Substack, thenotoriousbanker.substack.com. I will have a customized URL shortly for that, and the reason why mainly is because of Mr. Elon Musk, because he doesn't allow Substack links to show up like normal links on Twitter, and it basically treats it like porn is what it treats it like, so it doesn't get any traction when it comes to views and whatnot. So if I you know put jamesbacablogs.com, you're going to be able to find it. That's not going to be the domain name because I'm not that narcissistic anymore. But what I'm saying is I just need to find an easier way for you to access my writing because I'm doing a lot more writing, not necessarily just about banking, but about consumer advocacy things, musings that I've had. And I think that as a 40-year-old person now, I've become a more mature writer because I know how to write. I don't know what the word I'm looking for here is, but I know that I could whip something up in 50 minutes out of nowhere and talk about an issue that's important to me. I just posted a couple of blogs about the homeless issue in my area over here. And then yesterday about how tipping has become this like forced thing at the beginning of certain transactions at certain restaurants. It's just kind of weird. And I am not anti-tip culture, but I am anti making me make a rash decision at the terminal culture. So I wrote that. So I want you to check it out. I'll link to it in the show notes. You know, it's good writing. I don't want to say it's great writing, but I have an opinion and I'm kind of funny and I think that you'll like it, especially if you like this podcast. But one thing I am going to write about is my experience with Panda Express a couple of weeks ago. Now, as I mentioned with my consumer advocacy, I try not to be a Karen. I try not to be the person that makes everything about themselves and makes it a stressful time no matter where you go. Oh, my, you know, immunocompromised child didn't like the chicken strips at this restaurant because, you know, he started crying and I didn't want him to cry. Everything is a fucking sob story with people now. And I'm sorry for sounding rude, but everyone's issue is like the worst issue in the world. And it's just not the case, okay? Sometimes things happen. And I could tell you, being a manager in banking, sometimes horrible things happen. There's no internet service or the power goes out. That doesn't mean I'm a bad employee. The power went out, you know, but people will leave you one-star reviews or whatever. And I've told the story on this podcast before about nearly getting written up because we had a bomb threat in our bank, for God's sake. So, you know, this is the this is the reality of customer service now, where everyone whips out their phone and records the person who has wronged them. You know, it says, oh, look, this is, you know, Josie. She's the manager at KFC, and she shorted me one drumstick out of my 30-piece bucket. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, Josie messed up once, okay? Josie is not out on a personal attack against you, so you know, calm down. But, you know, whenever I have something happen to me, I kind of let it play out. And it's kind of like hockey. I don't want to talk sports here, but whenever there's a penalty in hockey, if the team that has the penalty that's going to happen to them doesn't have the puck, the play doesn't stop. Because if the team that was harmed because of the penalty has the puck, they still have the opportunity to score a goal. And if they score a goal, the penalty doesn't happen. But if the other team touches the puck, the whistle blows, it stops and says, hey, you guys touched the puck, but you guys are going to send number 10 to the box for 2 minutes for roughing. And that's what makes it fine, because you don't want to punish the other side for doing the right thing. That way you can punish that person for doing the wrong thing. It's complicated, but it's an apt analogy, trust me. So I just tend to let things play out whenever a bad experience happens, and I'm fine with it. I'm not going to try to mutter expletives under my breath at home or anything. I'll be frustrated, but I've grown up a lot in the last several years. So let me tell you about my Panda Express experience. Okay, so Panda Express is launching a revamped version of their rewards program. Every restaurant has it. It's called Panda Rewards. It's not necessarily the most unique name ever, but you know, I've been a member of their app and whatnot over the course of a decade. So, you know, signing up again, getting everything all squared away, I was excited. You know, I hadn't had it in a long time. I had a little bit of money, so I wanted to go spend my money there because it's good food. I enjoy it a lot. So I download the app. I enroll in their new club, and they gift you 20% off your entree thing. It's like a couple dollar savings. So, you know, I splurge a little. It's $11 out of pocket. Not the worst thing in the world. I mean, it's nothing. Place the order. I get my orange chicken, my sweet and sour. I gotta add mustard to everything because I love the mustard over there. It's the greatest ever. By the way, mustard Doritos, you gotta try them. They are the bomb, as the kids said in the 90s. So, you know, I'm at a grocery store. I place the order for my Panda Express on my phone. It's 6:33 p.m. when I do it. And whenever I'm going through the whole spiel of placing the order, it says it's going to be 10 to 12 minutes. So 6:33 makes it 6:43 to 6:45. Well, that's fine. I'm 10 minutes out. I'm cool with it. It's fine. You know, like, I expected to wait 10 minutes. Personally, I think I would have waited longer had I not ordered and stood in the drive-thru line. So it's already a win on my side. So, you know, I place the order, it's cool, and, you know, I'm not driving, my wife is, so, I have the phone on my side, and then all of a sudden, I get the notification haptic vibration on my phone, and I typically don't get haptic stuff unless it's for your order is ready, or a text message from a real person, or an email from the account where I get real emails and not bullshit spam. So I knew that it was quasi something that I should pay attention to. So I look at it and it says, your order is ready. Dude, we're still in the parking lot. It's 2.5 minutes later. It's 6:36 and we're still in this parking lot. And I didn't have some kind of weird specific order, but it was just chicken with brown steamed rice. Simple as that. It says your order is ready. And now I know at 6:30 p.m. on a Friday, you go there any time at dinner time, and that place is jumping. It is packed over there. So I was like, there is no way in hell that my food is ready, despite the fact that this push notification says that it is. So I'm not mad at the push notification saying it's ready, because I'm not there yet anyway. So, you know, we're still driving. We're still getting to our destination. And, you know, I'm looking forward to my food. I'm not, like, you know, jumping for joy. It's just food. But I get to Panda Express and get down. And, you know, I go to the mobile pickup. By the way, they have the worst configuration for picking up your mobile order, because you basically have to dry hump the person who is ordering on the feeder line there. So if that person was ahead of you, technically, you had to get behind them, but you almost had to kind of like sidle up to them, and it's just, it gets really uncomfortable. You're in their bubble at that point, so it just feels weird. So I'm just standing there, just waiting for my order. We're still 6:39. We're still, several minutes before the anticipated expected wait time for my food, even though they said it was done. The girl comes up and she's the nicest person in the world. She says, "Hey, how can I help you?" And I said, "I got an order for James mobile order." And she says, "Okay." And then she looks at her receipt machine and she notices that the receipt hadn't been taken out of the receipt feeder thing. So that tells me that someone didn't take it to the person who expedites the to-go orders, which means that it was never prepared. Because there's another person who does it. So I see her do that, and I see her break out one of the to-go boxes, throws my chicken in there, and then she goes to the little rice pot thing where they have, hundreds of pounds of rice, and she looks at it, and I just see her body just kind of like sink. And I already knew, I'm like, they didn't have my order ready, even though it said order ready. Even though I'm here at the time, the later part of the time that they said that my food would be ready and it wasn't ready yet. I see her sink, but I see her fill out my chicken and stuff. And then she goes, "Sir, I'm sorry, we no longer have brown steam rice available right now. We have to make some. Can I interest you in some noodles or white rice or fried rice?" And I'm not gonna get mad at her. And it wasn't her fault because I'm sure that that part was not her job. So I said, "Oh, I'll just give me fried rice. That's fine. I'm not gonna make a big deal about it." And I was not going to complain. Until I just kind of figured out what happened. Because it's not, if you complain to the manager in charge there, all the lesser people are gonna get it, and it may not be their fault. And I'll get to why it's not their fault in a second. So, I say fried rice, she throws the fried rice in there. She puts my fork and stuff in there. And a couple things. I didn't get a fortune cookie. I know it's not the worst thing in the world. And I got my hot mustard, which is fine. I got some napkins, which is fine. I love their napkins, by the way. Of all the fast food restaurant chains, Panda Express napkins are top notch. And I don't open my food right away, so I, get to the car and we go to our house because we don't eat at the restaurants. It's just weird to me, so we go eat at home. Break out my food, the fried rice. It's really old. It's like it was cooked, made to order, and then it was left out for several hours, and then it was reheated. It's just really dry, not good at all. Just I just can't explain. It's like fried rice that you would get in a microwave bag, at the grocery store. So I wasn't feeling that rice, although it was still good. The chicken was great, like it always is. It was amazing. But then I sit down and think, well, why did I get that notification that the order was ready? And if you've worked in fast food or know someone who works in fast food, you'll know that these people are timed for their transactions all the time. If you go inside Dunkin' Donuts and you pick up your coffee at the mobile app pickup thing, especially in my local Dunkin' Donuts, you can see this little screen with four panels, and it has a little countdown, and it has like you have three cars in drive-through, and the average time for this car to move to this spot is 1:40, and this one is 2 minutes away, whatever. And the numbers are dynamic, and they turn from green, which means you're on track, to white, which means you're on the borderline, to red, which means you fucked up. So it has all these things to monitor, and whenever there's stuff to monitor, that means there's data that's going into some asshole's computer somewhere, and they're saying, well, it looks like at location 1, 2, 3, 4, the average time for someone to get a coffee is 2 minutes and 49 seconds, and God damn it, that's unacceptable, Johnson. And someone gets yelled at. And the general manager of the store saying, "You guys need to pick up your turnaround time because it's so slow, it's ridiculous, and you're making us look like an embarrassment. You're an embarrassment to the Dunkin' Donuts name." I sound stupid saying that. I guess I can't work at Dunkin' Donuts. So Johnson, the general manager of the store, now comes back from his regional meeting in Phoenix or wherever, and he comes back to Las Cruces. And Dunkin' Donuts is literally a bunch of like 16-year-old girls who are first job, you know, they're still kind of shy and they don't look you in the eye and stuff like that. And they have a couple of people who are a little bit older there. And this person's going to go into work and it's like, I fucking had it with all you guys. You guys make me look like fucking shit at the meeting. This is bullshit. You guys are the worst ever. You guys are slow as fuck. Do you have metal in your shoes or what? And these people are just going to just hate life. They're going to be depressed. They're going to be stressed out because someone got chewed out because of the wait time. It's just human nature. I used to get chewed out because of the wait time as well. This is the story of my life. This is me in banking. When I was a teller in 2009 is how long ago it was. I was the worst when it came to transaction time as a teller. I remember distinctly one time I was 89 seconds per transaction. And to be fair, that's a lot. So what would happen is, you know, a straight deposit, which is a normal check deposit or cash deposit, can take as little as 19 seconds. I know we've timed how fast the simplest transactions were. 19 seconds is like all-time speed, Usain Bolt speed in deposits. So the fact that I was at 89 seconds was ridiculous. And I heard this too. It's like, James, you're slow. This is ridiculous. You're hurting us. You're going to cost us our bonus, our incentives. And you're messing up our BICR, which is like the overall score that the banks had. So, you know, me being slow was detrimental to the score, which meant that the lower the score, the lower the bonus that the bosses got. So they're like, what can we do to help you, James? Like, they thought I was like a fucking idiot or something because I was taking 89 seconds. I wasn't taking 89 seconds. I was good. I know how to handle a computer. So I was taking like 20 some odd seconds per transaction. But part of the teller job is, you know, Mr. Johnson, now that I made this deposit for you, can I interest you in a savings account? We do have Todd over there, and he can actually get you set up with a savings account today. That way you can save a little bit more money for the holidays. So whenever I would sales pitch, I would not end the screen, end the transaction, hit F11, which would turn off the transaction time and make me look good. So I'd offer the products. I'd do that part of the job correctly, which was cross-sell or refer. And if someone had questions, it's like, oh, can you tell me what the interest rate is on the savings account? And I was like, well, it is 0.05%. Oh, do you have any paperwork that you can give me? That way I could show it to my husband. That was always a no, by the way. And yeah, you know, you go print it out or whatever. And then the timer is still on. I haven't hit the button yet. So then I'd go to the printer. I give this lady the paperwork and say, just come see me whenever you want to do it. And I'll walk you through what you have to do. And she'd walk out with it, and I'd be like, oh shit, F11, 89 seconds. So it wasn't that I wasn't doing it fast enough. It was the fact that I was not showing the computer that I was doing it fast enough. So I was cheating myself the wrong way by making it seem longer, these transactions. I got to the point where I became a manager, and the reason why is because I improved on those things. I identified the problem, and I moved on. So I immediately took that note. That the fact that people took notes of your turnaround time, excuse me, to the Panda Express thing. So the fact that I placed an order on my phone and we weren't even backed out of the parking lot yet when my phone said that it's ready. And to me, it's ready means that it's in a bag with the receipt and napkins and my fortune cookie that it's fucking ready. So that's what I'm getting at. So 10 minutes later, when there was no bag, there was no container, there was no cookie, and there was no rice that I specifically ordered, I'm like, what's going on? This is ridiculous. Now, a normal Karen, a normal customer who's mean, would whip out their phone and put it on TikTok and look, this is what Panda Express has come to. Hashtag Panda sucks. Hashtag orange chicken. Hashtag sweet and sour chicken. Hashtag Chinese food. I mean, that's what these fucking people do. It's sad. Someone who was Mr. Social Media for the longest time, it's sad that you have to exploit someone and you don't even understand the whole job part of it on their side, but you're recording them against their wishes because of why? Because your food wasn't 100% what you wanted it? Dude, I got something that I liked anyway. It's not what I wanted, but I still got food, and I was hungry, so I ate it. So it's fine, whatever. But, like I said, taking me back to the time thing, what I think happened was someone said that it's ready, sending me that push notification on my phone saying that it's ready to basically stop the clock on them and to improve their, quote, turnaround time. That way, and some report somewhere, the GM is going to say, man, look at this Las Cruces location. It's so fast. A mobile order, 2 minutes and 40 seconds. Holy cow. That's the best in the market. And you know what? We haven't got any negative complaints about the place, so I can tell that you have a great team there, Johnson. Apparently Johnson works at Panda Express too. So, you know, I think it's one of two things. Either the associates were getting yelled at by the slow turnaround time at Panda, which it is a slow time, but like I said, it's fine. I expect that from that place. And they're hitting the button to fudge their numbers to make it look like they're faster on what they're doing. Or worse yet, the general manager, shift manager, whatever, is telling the associates, hey, whenever you hear the beep for a mobile order and you see a receipt printout, hit a button, do this, do that. That way it dispositions the turnaround time. That way we bank that good time in the system. That way it looks better for all of us and we could all get, you know, good job said towards us or whatever. And it sounds weird, but I think it's that one. I think some manager got chewed out and said, we're tired of this location having slow turnaround times. What kind of people are you hiring over there, Johnson? This is ridiculous. This is bullshit. And this is not indicative of the Panda Express brand. You have to fix this right away. So some genius says, hey, you know what? Just hit this button. That way it looks like James picked it up at 6:37 p.m., 2 minutes after he ordered it. And we get enough of those things, and whenever we do run long on the other transactions, it kind of balances out, and we end up being one of the best in the market in terms of turnaround time because, you know, we're doing these things, even though it's not true. Because as long as you have his food ready and you hit this button, that person's not going to care because it's going to take him a while to get here anyway. But the fact that I got there at the time that my food was expected to be done according to the app, even though 10 minutes before it said it was done already, I wasn't happy because I was lied to. And the fact that I was lied to, not by the people, because they looked like they were dumbfounded by not having my rice. But the fact that the app itself told me that it was ready when it clearly was not, tells me that someone is doing some shady stuff with the numbers. Now, if there's like quarterly incentives, monthly bonuses, trips to Vegas that are tied to the fastest turnaround time for Panda Express in the market, in the region, then that's when I have a problem. Then that means that you're fudging the numbers, creating a bad customer service experience for me and other people by claiming that you're giving us our food within 3 minutes of ordering it, but 15 minutes after I actually ordered it and 5 minutes after the latest expectation of time that it was there and 10 minutes after you told me that it was ready, I still did not have my food in hand. So like I said, you know, you can easily on a survey say 1 star, this is ridiculous, worst Panda ever. But no, I gave them a 4 stars out of 10. I said this is what I know happened because I'm a former bank manager. I understand about timing, I understand about reports and all that. And I think this is what happened. I think this is why this happened and what can be fixed going forward. And I said that on Twitter. And then I also shared it on the survey as well. On Twitter, Panda Express went totally fucking silent. They may have just clicked on my profile and saw consumer advocate, blah, 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 whatever that I am. And say, no, we're not fuck with this guy because he's actually making too much sense. And if we publicly acknowledge that, then, well, guess what? We're up Schitt's Creek or whatever. And I didn't get a response immediately on my survey on Bank of America. I'm talking bank shit here. Panda Express's email that they sent me. Because usually when you leave a low number, they'll contact you and ask if there's anything they could do. So I didn't get that. So then I followed up with another email to the email address that was on the survey thing. And I just said, hey, I just want to let you know, this is why I left this review here. So a couple days later, I get a response from someone at Panda Express. And, you know, I found it hilarious because I know this all goes into like a feeder system somewhere. And then that person's job is, hey, you're going to be assigned James in New Mexico. So can you try to make this right with him to make sure that he doesn't continue to leave negative reviews for us anytime that he comes here to eat? And I know that that's what they do. So I get a response on June 11th. And it's from Brittany J. Brittany with one T, because she's cool. And not Brittany like Spears. Brittany like Brittany Murphy minus a T. And this one says, hi, James. Thanks for reaching out about what happened. We apologize for the delay. It's taking us a lot longer to get through our messages at the moment. Is there like a supply chain thing with customer service reps? I don't know. We're genuinely sorry that your order wasn't as expected. And see, that's where I think this is cookie cutter, because my order was fine even though I didn't get the rice that I wanted. The food was good. I ain't complaining about the food. We'll be sharing your comments with the restaurant team so that they may learn from your experience and improve. Yeah, I'm sure they will, right? And then this is weird, because it's not like I asked for free shit in my complaint. I didn't. I was like, give me free food now or I'm going to leave more bad reviews, goddammit. And then it says, can we offer 2 single-use coupon codes for a complimentary small a la carte entree to use on your next in-store visit or online order? So, you know, I'm like, okay, that's a 2-item meal. That's just a la carte. That means no rice. So it's like $6 worth of food. I'm like, okay, well, it's good, I guess. I didn't ask for it, but if you want to give it to me, that's fine. But then I came to think about it. And then this is what I wrote on the email back. Good day. Are the 2 single-use coupons for a complimentary small a la carte entree able to be used at the same time? And does it require a minimum purchase? See, because when you do a survey, it says you do a survey, we'll give you a small a la carte entree with a $10 purchase or a purchase of a 2 entree or whatever. You have to spend money. So if they give me 2 of that coupon, of the survey coupon, then that means that they're trying to get me to actually eat there 2 more times in order to fulfill the oops, we fucked up part of their customer service experience. So, you know, I already know that they're just trying to get 20 some odd dollars from me out of pocket so I can cash in on orange chicken and this little a la carte thing, which is going to be 3 fucking pieces of chicken. So then I say, if so, then I'll have to decline because you're asking me to give 2 additional chances to Panda after the incident. And I just want to be assured that last Friday was a one-off. I said, I rarely eat out, which is true. I rarely eat out. So when I come to Panda Express, it's because I value the brand and the people inside. I said, I do want to believe that my comments are being shared, as I mentioned in the comments. I feel the reason that the incident happened was the staff is being trained to fudge the transaction time on those online orders, leading to an experience where I spent money and did not get exactly what I was promised and requested 15 minutes beforehand. That's what's important to me. Thank you for your time, and I look forward to your reply. Have a great day. I wrote that within hours of them writing back, and they haven't fucking wrote me back yet. So I'm getting ghosted on that again. So I guess no single-use a la carte complimentary entree coupons for me. But that's fine. The fact that I'm able to talk like an adult and say, you guys messed up and I want my refund, goddammit, I hate you all. I'm not doing that. I'm just basically saying, look, this is what's happening. I know from workplace experience that this is what's happening. Give me the benefit of the doubt. Please make this right by me. And having this conversation, because other people are going to be impacted by it and they're not going to be consumer advocates or they're not going to be nearly as nice as me. Haven't got a response yet. So, you know, at the end of the day, and this is what I tell people with everything that I do as Notorious Banker, understand that whenever, unless you have some just horrible person who's talking back to you or whatever, you know, at the cashier at the fast food place, chances are your bad experience is not because of them. It's because of poor training or it's because of incorrect training. Now, I think my issue with Panda Express happened because of either incorrect training or something nefarious where they're lying to their corporate about how fast they are. And at that point, they were caught with their pants down and they didn't have the order ready as promised because they were just so used to hitting a button saying it's done when it wasn't ever started. And I think that's where customer service is waning a lot more, because I know, they know that I know what happened, but they also know that the average person won't know what happened, And the average person is just going to whip out their phone, send it on TikTok, and go on rants on social media, even though they're rarely on Twitter. And Panda Express is going to say, oh, we're sorry, here's a coupon. It's more than just a coupon. It's about making sure you do things right. Now get this, the general managers at Panda Express make a fucking $100,000 a year. That's almost three times what I made as an entry-level personal banker or sales manager at Bank of America. $102,000 a year. It's $4,000-some-hundred-dollars a paycheck. It's crazy. It's a lot of money. Oh man, I'd be so far out of debt, it'd be ridiculous. They make so much money, and they know that the people who run the Panda Expresses with the Burger Kings of the world are not necessarily the cream of the crop. Not to denigrate those people, but I'm just the truth, you know. If you have a PhD in something, you're not going to be a GM at Panda Express. So these people who fall upward into a job that is high paying and, quote, easy as fuck, as a lot of my former Socorro, New Mexico townspeople would say, don't want to lose that job, so they find ways to make it look like they're the fucking hero at their job, showing people how to do these things to continue to make them look like heroes. That way they can continue getting those, you know, $4,000 paychecks, getting these bonuses, especially if they have high volume at those locations, and moving on up the food chain, all based on a lie. Now, you may be listening to this podcast and go, James is crazy. What the hell is going on with him? But no, it's the truth. And I say these things because I understand them from a perspective of a former manager. And I want to make sure that the people who choose to work at a place like Panda Express have the best opportunity to succeed at that job, even though it's an entry-level job. Because if the wrong person makes a complaint about what happened in the wrong way, then people are going to get fired. People are going to lose their job, or they're going to lose their trust in their boss. All because nothing was explained to them. They were told what to do, even though it was incorrect. And that incorrect way of telling them what to do negatively impacted me. It's probably negatively impacted other people. And with Panda Express trying to launch their Panda Rewards program, it's negatively impacted that in my eyes, because I'm not going to immediately go back until I feel the craving for that. If you gave me a lights out experience, I'm definitely going to think about coming back. But this wasn't lights out. And that's just the sad state of affairs here. We have to make decisions all the time about, you know, are we valued as customers? And in this case, I don't think I was valued. I became just another number at that point, because I was another ticket number that someone hit a button saying that, hey, this guy's food is done. Didn't realize that there was James, who was like a hungry, hungry hippo, trying to get his food so he can consume it at home and feel good about himself on a Friday evening. I value and thank people who work in fast food jobs, man. It's a hard job. It's not fun to have to deal with that many people and that many angry people on a daily basis. Is not pleasant. So more power to them. But to the people who are GMs, who are not wearing the polo shirts or whatever Panda Express people wear, and they're wearing a suit and tie to the quote office, to the food chain, while they look at all these reports and they talk about their store and they talk about things that can be improved with their store with their superiors, someone saw an opportunity to kind of shave some turnaround time from their transactions, and it might have just costed them a customer for a while and yours truly. So Panda Express, I really hope you do get back to me. I'm not really holding my breath, but I just want to know that. I just want you to know that, just, you know, everything going on in the world, me not having my food within a couple of minutes at the latest expected time is not the end of the world. It's the fact that you told the quote system that I walked out with the food and I was a happy camper, when it was never even thought of or prepared in the whole time that I was there. And that's the thing that bugs me the most, and that's the thing that I want to talk about going forward on these podcasts. So I really hope that you enjoyed that, because I plan on doing that a lot more. Not necessarily just my stories, but other things as well. So that's going to wrap it up for another episode of The Notorious Banker. I am James Baca, known professionally as The Notorious Banker, signing off. You can follow me on my social media platforms, 30,000 strong combined, all across my social media platforms, at Notorious Banker. You can find my book, high-risk transaction, the Ryan Coogler Bank of America incident, available on Amazon.com in ebook and paperback format. And I got so much more on the burners, my friends. I'm going to work hard to give you more content. I'll get back on TikTok, too, in the not-too-distant future, because once I get my mojo going, you're going to be seeing a lot of me, and you're going to be like, God damn, this guy is annoying. But that also means I'm going to be working hard as well. And just like the consumer advocacy that I preach about, I'm going to be the best consumer advocate I can be and give you my all 100% of the time. I promise you that. So until we meet again, my friends, my name is James Baca, signing off. Known professionally as the Notorious Banker, I'll be talking to you soon, and you have a great day. Goodbye.